Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 253. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Iron Grip, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with people that I believe in, companies that I believe in their product, companies that I believe in their integrity and the type of people they are. And Iron Grip's been in every single weight room that I've ever had, including my own garage. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the podcast. This week, I'm joined by Mike Potenza. He's the director of strength and conditioning for the San Jose Sharks. He's in the middle of the playoffs right now, so he's a busy man, but he's taking some time out. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I've been a long time listener. So,
no, that's awesome, man. Well, Mike, hey, you've been, you've had a good background. I mean, you're part of the Springfield Mafia, right?
It's changed to Mafia rather than cult. It used to be called a cult.
I call it the Mafia. It's what I had Brian Thompson in. I'm claiming that one. I coined that one.
Yeah.
But you've been at Boston University. You've worked with Boyle. You've been Miami, Harvard, Colgate. Wisconsin, you've had a good career in a lot of different places, seen it a lot of different ways. Which one of those experiences best defines the coach you are today?
I would say Wisconsin. I you know, from a family standpoint, we fell in love with Madison. That was the place that that was my first big shot. That was when in the hockey coaching world, an up-and-coming coach wants to have their own bench. I would say, I had my own weight room. I had my own team, and it was a really competitive team in a very competitive league, both with men's and women's hockey that I had. I had wrestling, and I had softball too. Right. So I was, it could not have been a better place. The coaches were amazing. The athletes were amazing. And we were successful. Obviously, that helps. But all in all, that's where I could really put everything together that I learned through Springfield, from BU, from Boyle, from IPI at the time, where I spent some time there, but even all my experiences, that was the best.
You had those spots, you've had. We talked about Brian Thompson, talked about Mike Boyle. I mean, you've had some good mentors, and we talked a little bit even off camera about how you feel almost obligated to kind of be that mentor for other strength coaches down the line. Who are some of those mentors and what kind of impact did they have on you?
I'm going to throw, you mentioned those bigger names in our field. Obviously Mike had a big impact in my career. There's no doubt about it, but names that you don't hear a lot of that are super successful are Margaret Jones was my advisor, but also department head for strength and conditioning at Springfield before she moved on to George Mason. She started it for me. I was eager. I was interested. I was curious. And she didn't she had time for me, and I owe her a lot. And, from one relationship, it grew into another with Glenn Harris at BU, who hired me for a summer internship. And then I got a chance to meet Mike, and Glenn to this day is like a big brother to me. And then we constantly are sharing ideas, and he's been awesome. A great friend. Sean Hayes, who's at the University of Georgia with basketball. I followed Sean was a master's student at Springfield, and I was an undergrad, and he took me under his wing at the time, and all through his time at Buffalo, at Clemson, he hired me at Harvard for a part-time position before I went to Colgate after I graduated from BU. He's been tremendous to learn from and with, and we still stay in contact. Brandon Marcello is another one who was my intern director at International Performance Institute in Bradenton. And again, he was a great friend and a great teacher, and continues to be. And we still stay in contact to this day, talk quite frequently about training and recovery and what he's looking into now. So those are some of the names that I would say.
Yeah, I love how you, you know, again, it'd be easy to kind of hang your hat on some of the bigger names that that you've had influenced by or been a part of. But, I mean, we all have those people that are the unsung heroes that allow us to be who we are. And I really like the fact that you took that moment to really recognize some of those. I mean, and all of them are big names in and of themselves, but –
Yeah, and those are people like, you know, like we can go on and on. It can be an hour where I can talk about people who I've come across with and still stay in contact with and have developed great relationships with. And there's no, you know, the value of, you know, the big names, and obviously Mike is probably the biggest amongst them all. Like there's importance to that, and then there's respect you want to give to that. But there's the names I just mentioned are people that I don't think everybody's listening to or trying to find material or even just cold calling them. Just to just talk shop and talk training.
Yeah. You
know, that was one of the things in my career. Like I called, out of the blue, Johnny Parker. I called, Mark Uyama when I didn't meet him when I first came here. And I just cold called people, and they were so gracious to open up their lines of communication. Bill Knowles is another guy on the rehab side that does an amazing job to bridge the gap between functional rehab, reconditioning and therapy. So that's rewarding in our field when, you know, you think someone has such a big name, they won't talk to you, but you know what? They probably will. So
no doubt. Well, everybody, I say this all the time on the show, but everybody that's been the head strength coach in an NHL team or in the NFL like me or others, we all got there by people helping us along the way. Yeah. When people are sincere about reaching out and having intelligent questions and asking you, you know, about how to chase this profession that we all know and love, people want to help those people. And so I agree with you 100%. What, you know, you don't get to be the head strength coach at an NHL team without having made mistakes. I mean, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learned from it?
Biggest mistake I made was I didn't understand the value and impact of communication, like over communicating. And that just means, you know, hey, when are your workouts going to be based on our Travis schedule and our game schedule and what's each particular guy working on and okay, in an injury process, what benchmarks have you accomplished to get that guy to the next phase of his rehab or reconditioning? Simple scheduling things, things that I found from a eval or a performance eval or a movement eval that I didn't share with enough parties in our organization that everybody should know, if all those make sense. So I it's not that I didn't value communication. I just, coming out of Wisconsin, it was a smaller group that needed to be communicated to. The head coach was the general manager, president, and Alpha and Omega.
Right.
And then assistant coaches. Then you had our athletic trainer. And then there was me, so on our staff per se. So that's five, and an administrator that would deal scheduling and travel and whatnot. So six people.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, 16 people.
Right.
And everybody has an impact on decision making. So in the beginning, I wanted to keep everything in house, shared what I felt like I needed to, but didn't overshare. And that's what I make sure I do now. You know, deliver as much info as I can, over communicate, make performance evals, developmental evals for our younger players crystal clear. And not only with what we're seeing, but with a course of action and timelines where need be. So,
yeah, I think that's one thing as strength coaches, sometimes we want to hoard that information, but and that we think sometimes that gives us power with the athletes, but the reality is that it's a siloed approach will feel everything.
I didn't feel empowered by holding it, Ron. You know what? I felt like, okay, well, they don't need all that detail. They just need to know this.
Yeah.
But you know, through the process of learning and understanding what they needed to help make their decisions, I left some gaps so that I would make sure that, you know, that's been my goal and in delivering more, especially when it comes to segment reports, 20 game reports, again, developmental reports on young players, and then even older guys, veterans, on forecasting how much they have left in the tank for us, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. We talked a little bit, before hitting record about, just the mindset of a professional hockey player. And at this point, I mean, it's like football and other sports where strength and conditioning is a lot more prevalent than it was even 10 years ago. But there are still athletes that come out of, they're drafting out of high school, they're drafting out of, small college and whatnot, that you got a good portion of athletes that are just, as soon as they go into the weight room, they want to kill themselves. And that if it wasn't, a puking drop, laying on your back workout, it wasn't a good workout. And then you got those that are like they've never really had much of a training background. And not really wanting to go to the weight room too much. Yeah. How do you blend those type of mindsets into, because they're all good players or they wouldn't be there. How do you blend that into a core program and being able to give, that athlete that wants a little bit more and the one that doesn't want as much, making sure that they meet the standard.
Yeah. One of the things, that you can be successful in this game, young and old, having not trained, because skill is such a valuable commodity in hockey. It does catch up with you, and it manifests itself in terms of injuries. It manifests itself of, when you hit that, if you're a young kid coming in 5 to 8 years later or 6 to 8 years later, you start to slow down. You don't have as much jump. You're not getting into spaces and out of spaces and creating opportunities or shutting down plays the way you used to. So with that being said, I like to take the guys who are that talented but don't have a good training background and kind of pair them up with a veteran who's kind of seen the light, whether they're in the league. We're lucky enough to have a lot of good veterans that have been training since they were really young and now are leaning on that foundation to be successful and to just accumulate years in this league. We have and those guys have anywhere between 12 to 20 years in this league.
Right.
And an injury history that's not very long. So that just the proof is in the pudding. So when we put those guys together, we try to teach our young guys, especially our rookie development camp in the summer, that, hey, here are the habits of our older, more successful guys. And by default or by accident that those guys who are training for so long and are still in the league have really good training scores. Like they're pretty fat. They're fast. They're explosive, and they have a long injury history. So we try to drive that point home. There are times throughout the year where you're energized, you're ready to go, beginning of the year, and then you just kind of make sure you have to be aware as a coach. Where's that drop off going to happen? And when that drop off happens, that's kind of when we have to recreate energy in that type of environment of training. Right? It happens about 3 or 4 times out of the year. And then obviously with the playoffs beginning, everybody's jazzed up, everybody's ready to go. And then as you get into the different rounds and you get a little bit more tired, like today's a perfect example. Like today, we had a long game last night, guys are coming in a little sluggish. So we try to make it, an environment where we want to get something done. We can't just give them a pass, and whether it be an extended, more dynamic warm up or locomotion, that's the term that we're using now. But just to get them do a little bit more, something to prime the engine for tomorrow, but not let them stay dormant, right? We want to keep moving. We don't want to rust is our term. We don't want guys to rust, but we also don't want to burn them out. So we've got to keep them moving.
Yeah, it leads right into my, the next question I wanted to get into is, as strength coaches, so many times we're so programmed into this is our preseason, this is our in season, and we all want to make it to the postseason, but we don't put nearly as much time and effort into planning out that postseason training program until you get to it and until it's right up on you. What advice do you have for, coaches that, on the front end to prepare, but then also like, what are you trying to accomplish? I mean, there's a good portion of coaches that are like the hay is in the barn at that point. Let's just go to work and let's be fresh and go. Mm-hmm. And then there's a good portion that's like, man, we need to be training all the way up until freaking the last minute of the last game.
Right. To peak, if you will. Yeah. It's funny, Ron, because I had to, and this is my 12th year, thank God, to be in this league. And probably like 4 years ago, I finally realized, like, you know, hey, I'm still in that college mentality where I love the off season and thought in season was like, it's maintenance. And I hate that term. It's a garbage term for what you need to do in season. And I thought that way because in college, like, we trained, like, we only played two games a week, and it was conducive to training. It was true development. While I'm here, I'm like, man, I don't like my in-season program. I just don't feel like it's enough stimulus. I feel like it just kind of, you lull yourself into that monotony throughout the year. There's no, we know where our valleys are, but there's no time. How do I inject stimulus, what we gained or we had coming out of the summer, throughout the season, throughout a hockey season, throughout a season where you're traveling a ton, three different time zones on a road trip, at games every other day, you know, an average of 14 games a month. So that's like every other day, right?
Right.
So I kind of flipped my mentality. So my off season energy and focus became my in season. So, and then I started talking to as many coaches as I could. Johnny Parker was one of them about in season training. Cause I thought he did it really well. And then Al Miller, who was here in Oakland, I drove up and met him, and he was another gracious guy to talk and listen and answer all my questions. And I finally thought to myself, all right, I like my off season. I think it prepares our guys well. We have an awesome culture of guys coming back a month ahead of time to train together, skate together. So I do have that commitment level of our players. And I just kind of refocus my energies into the in season. So now when the playoffs come, we try to go as hard as we can and intense as we can until January 31st. And for us, that means every month-ish, Ron, we do jumps tests and we do 3RM trap bar, 3RM bench. And so there's our strength measures. There's our power scores, right? So we'll do four jump on the just jump mat, and we'll do a vertical jump counter movement on the just jump mat. And we track those throughout the year and compare them to the preseason testing, as part of our preseason testing, to see if there's a 10% drop off. We don't want anything below 10%, right? Along while we're doing that, it's a load driven program the first half of the year. And so we're doing gym aware. We have gym aware to track our velocity scores. Yeah. And it's a load driven program, meaning we want the heaviest 3RM, we want the heaviest trap bar. As soon as we get to February 1, I switch that mentality. So then I'm like, okay, the loads that we just achieved, I want to shoot for velocities. And I'm not going to shoot for the velocities that carried the heaviest loads. I don't need them to be 0.2 or 0.3. Because in the second half of the year, I don't think the skeletal system, your nervous system, can handle a load-driven program or an intensity, high-intensity-driven program. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've gone with velocities to make sure we keep our speed qualities and get our nervous system to work. And we're not that far off of loads, you know. So we're okay there. It keeps our players safe. This is my third year doing it, and my first 2 years it was load driven all year. And there were times in February and March I'm like, man, I'm really, you know, having guys do a double or a triple in February and March with a trap bar, I'm like, I'm really feeling with danger here, you know. So, you know, Kevin Neal, my assistant, and I talked about, using gym wear to gain velocities and at the particular loads, and it's been going great. Knock on wood. So
yeah, that's great. Well, I think, you know, again, I mean, I think it's having a plan. I think it goes back to, you know, you recognize the fact that, you know, it wasn't where you wanted it to be. You sought out to experts and, our additional influences went back to work on it. And I think that's, you know, I mean, it'd be easy for you 12 years in the league just to say, well, we did the last time we were in the playoffs, we did this. So this is what we're going to do.
Right. And that's, and I had to gain, I'll be perfectly honest with you, it took me that long to gain the confidence to say, well, you know, our varying rep ranges throughout the year are good enough, you know, or we're hitting every movement from a knee dominant, hip dominant, upper pulling, upper pressing, different core type movements and some explosive moves. I was happy with that, but I needed confidence to say, all right, there's got to be more to this, right? There's got to be a better way we can do it with the culture that we have and not burn the guys out.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You talked a little bit about your growth and the confidence that you've had to kind of come of your own. You know, it took you 12 years in the league. I mean, if you could go back and tell your Wisconsin self, you know, a couple things that you wish you, you know, you could go back and tell that guy, what would they be?
I would say, you know, be more ready with handling all of the information that's out there now and trying to keep up with it and trying to be an NHL strength coach and be a father and a husband, you know, so manage your time wisely and stay up with that as best you can. I try to now. I think there's some amazing information out there, Ron. I think there's a lot of information out there, and I'm just trying to keep my lips above the water.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, geez, I feel like I'm behind at times, but other times, you know, we're always injecting new things that we learn. The second thing I would tell myself is, okay, as soon as you can, go get – I have aspirations to become an LMT or CMT, whatever the acronym you want to use. But I think that's a huge skill in this area. Like, we can fix things right before we get started in the gym. We can get recovery-based work on guys for lymphatic drainage. You know, I have – Kevin has his LMT credential, which it's awesome. He looks at the body and the athlete system in an impressive way. But I think if we both had that, we would be able to stay on top of more soft tissue related injuries, but recovery based things. So hopefully this summer I can pursue that. And I know it's definitely still on my wish list of things to do. The third thing would be get ready. Let me tell my younger self, like, if you think you're ready to deal with a group of athletes that's all the same and on the same playing field, you're not. Like, we have 20 of – I classify them as rookies, veterans, and then seasoned veterans. And rookies are, you know, less than 3 years in the league. Veterans are going to be, you know, 4 years to eight. And then 9 years and above, you're a seasoned veteran. You've been around a long time. So not only do they need a different program because physiology changes and what they need to accomplish in their program changes, but, you know, you have years of wear and tear and compensations
right.
Old injuries that you have to negotiate with these guys. So in the form of a program, so be ready, because it's a lot more than just throwing up that maintenance program up there. Like, it has to be very, you know, somewhat individualized, where you're not writing 25 different programs, and that would be insane, you know. But there are some trends that everybody can kind of follow and as you group things. So
absolutely. And just to clarify, LMT, licensed massage therapist.
Certified massage therapist in some state. Yep.
Yeah. You know, you talked off camera about your desire to, as you grow in this profession, to want to give back and to, you know, to mentor and develop coaches. And, you know, at this point, you know, you've been in it for a long time, just like me. You know, you've seen a lot of different, you know, back to when we first got in the profession, there wasn't nearly the amount of information. And now you're drinking water through a fire hose.
Yeah.
What do you think, you know, is the current state of the union? What do you think is the, where can we make the biggest impact in strength and conditioning in the next 10 years?
As mentors?
Yeah, or just where, you know, I mean, we all have, you know, this is something that I talk about a lot on the show and just when I speak is, mm-hmm. we have an obligation to develop this profession, to keep this profession going in the right direction, yeah. You know, and, you know, it's a 60-year-old profession at this point, really, you know, right. So what are we going to do as individuals that are currently in it to advance it in the next 10 years?
Right. I think two things. One, as we know more science, like, it's pretty safe to say, like, there was a lot of the training 60 or 50 years ago, 40 years ago, was rooted in work.
Right.
Work, and there was some science, but not as much. Now, like, we're tipping the scale the other way. So much science. Let's do the right thing. Let's do, let's have a block periodization plan. Let's only work on this quality. Let's make sure our metabolic work is really specific to this and alactic and elective power, elective capacity. I get it. I'm definitely the guy that's going to geek out about that stuff and love that stuff.
Right.
I think we can't forget the coaching side, because society's it delivers information quickly, quick satisfaction, you know, sometimes entitlement, like, you should have this, you should be there already. Or, you know, this guy's playing in the league, so you should be playing in the league because you played against him in junior or college. Like,
right.
I think we can't forget about hard work. We can't forget about the gut check type workouts and the team aspect of, okay, this is going to be hard, and it's going to be hard for a reason, because we want to see you crack.
Right.
And science may go out the window at that point, right? Science probably will go out the window in developing those types of workouts, while infrequent, very important for mental development, right? Or team development. So I think with that being said, coaches, my fear is coming across more coaches like that think they should have a job before they've cut their teeth in a bunch of different experiences. You know, have you built fridges as an intern? Have you done that for like 3 or 4, 2 years or whatever? Have you been a third level or third assistant? Have you been a second assistant? Have you, you know, had to go and get out of your comfort zone in where you live because that's the only place you've worked and where you grew up? Do you have to go to another place in the country and get out of that comfort zone and experience something else, right? This can't be a quick, gratifying, I'm going to get my first job I interview for and it's going to be a director position at a big name school type mentality. It's not. That's not the way I came up, you know, and I'm okay with doing as many internships as I did and working as many different places. As you know, like I've been blessed at every place I've gone to, met some great people. So our young professionals have to remember that's part of the job, right? That's part of the process. And you got to be willing to go and do that. Brandon Marcello told me one of the best quotes. I'll never forget it. He said, Mike, a ship in the harbor is safe, but it's not what it's built for. Because I was in the mentality, I'm going to stay in New England. I'm going to work for Boyle. I'm going to get an internship with the Patriots. I'm going to get an internship with the Bruins. But, you know, like those jobs are all taken. Like those are, you know, Brandon was one of the people that pushed me. He's like, Mike, you could go explore, like get out, like you're down here in Florida, like keep going and you'll learn more and you'll be more well-rounded and definitely have a better platform or palette of experiences. And he was right. You know, he was right.
Yeah. I think both of those things, you know, lend itself well to, I think ultimately our biggest responsibility as strength and conditioning coaches is to take people to places that they never think that they've been before or that they never thought about getting to. And whether or not that's, you know, you're overloading the muscle and you're doing more weight or you're doing more reps or you're more time or whatever you want to be, or the occasional butt kicking workout just to be like, man, you know, see what you can accomplish.
Yep.
Like you said, pushing coaches outside of their comfort zone to continue to expand their wings and grow. And I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah.
We end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Best piece of coaching advice I received. There's that ship in the harbor one. That's for sure.
You might use that one.
Yeah, that was. Let me stay with that one. That was. That's a good one.
I like.
I would say, you know, the simple. Another simple one is, you know, that Mike Boyle quote. They don't know how much. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And that you do have to build relationships, and those relationships do not have to be or have a foundation of letting guys walk all over you and get away with stuff. That's not the point. The point is that they know that you're there to help them in every way possible, you know, from an athletic development standpoint, from, you know, how you teach them what you want to do physically, that's going to help their game. So, and just to be a resource, you know, I feel like I'm that for all of our guys. There's, you know, sometimes there's a carrot and a stick. There's no doubt about it. And you have to hold your ground. And, but I would say your athletes got to know your care. Your actions will prove that too.
No doubt. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Book, my favorite book for a young strength coach, who is looking to have their own teams and have their own responsibilities, an old book. But it was the one that I read when I took the Wisconsin job. It's called Your Ship. It's Your Ship by Commander Michael Abishoff. He commanded one of the battleships in the Gulf War. And it talks a lot about – he took the worst ship in the Navy and made it the best ship in the Navy. And he did that by entitling the people on the ship, the servicemen and women on the ship, to treat that ship like their own. So that he wanted to entitle them. So they would have a higher level and a higher standard for that. For not only their process, but taking care of the ship and their duties and any wartime duties as well. So it's one of my favorites, I should say. Websites, Mike's doing a tremendous job with strengthcoach.com. You can't forget about that one. Mike Robertson does a great job as well. I think those are tremendous resources to look into. From a fact-finding, science-y site, I think Dr. Rhonda Patrick has some really good information and in articles that you can read. She's super on the super heavy on the science side, but it has become a real good resource for us on a lot of different things. She speaks coach, right? She speaks performance, so which is cool. But she can go the whole other way and talk research and data and things like that. So
that's the key, is being able to do both, right?
Yeah.
Any apps? You guys need?
No, DoorDash. When you got three kids, I think DoorDash is the biggest one. That
what is DoorDash? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, DoorDash is like a service where your local restaurants are all on it, so you can just order anything.
Oh, gotcha. All right, like Uber Eats or something. Yeah,
Uber Eats. Yeah, but I would say, you know what we're using quite a bit of, Ron, that I love, is Kipman Labs, and we're using them for data. We're using them for our questionnaire, our daily weigh-ins, and things like that. And we're a data-oriented society. We're a data-driven performance field now, and it does an awesome job for Kevin and I to take 12 years. You know, one of the things I'm proud of is that we have 12 years of data. From training camps, but also from development camps in the summertime and combine. So right. We can dump all this stuff in and start really looking and answering our questions or asking different questions on how to profile guys. Right. So
that's awesome, man. Well, like I said, I mean, you to give up some time during the playoffs to come on the show is incredible. And then, you know, it's obvious to me the passion that you have for giving back to the profession, pouring into it, and helping define it in the next, you know, in the next 10 years, and 10 years after that. So,
thank you. Great.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.